I was hosting the show today from West Palm Beach, Florida, no less, and I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Right off the bat, I'd like to tell you that for the next hour, you can reach us directly, or in this case, indirectly, by phone at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI, and I absolutely urge you to use that number and call us at any point in the show. Don't be shy. I'm telling you, we love to get calls. Otherwise, we get a bit lonely, either at the KUCI studios or in West Palm Beach, Florida, temporary studios, or wherever we are. So we're pretty darn friendly here at Talking Animals, especially so with callers. So please phone us. Other ways to be in touch include emailing us at talkinganimals@aol.com and checking out our website at talkinganimals.net. Again, that's talkinganimals.net, folks. Meanwhile, here at Talking Animals, primarily we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources, but we're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. It's been more than 10 months since we launched Talking Animals, and we've been enormously fortunate during that time to have a long string of terrific guests, ranging in recent weeks from comedian, actress, activist Janine Garofalo to Dr. Dee Boersma, one of the world's most renowned experts on penguins, to Alan Young, who played Wilbur Post on Mr. Ed. Not only are the shows featuring those interviews archived on our nifty website at www.talkinganimals.net, but our string of exceptional guests continues today when we speak with Chuck Tracy, who for the better part of a year has overseen the day-to-day operation of a so-called sanctuary in Colton, California called Tiger Rescue, helping dozens of tigers and other big cats there who'd been subjected to some of the most egregious and outrageous wild animal neglect and abuse on record. Regular listeners know we've been discussing Tiger Rescue for months here on Talking Animals, primarily trolling for volunteers to join the troops of cool folks who've been helping Chuck care for these animals every single day, and know that this is a pretty dark saga. Thankfully, the story will have a happy ending, and we'll get the details of the whole tale in a few minutes when we hear this interview with Chuck Tracy. Meanwhile, on Talking Animals, it's time for our weekly look at items of interest in animal news. And I want to remind you of the phone number to join us on the show with your own comments and questions about animals, not only this week's animal news items, but also any other animal topic you'd care to discuss. Announcements, if you have an event coming up we should know about, observations, of course, any news stories you might have spotted that we should be aware of, they'd all be most welcome. The phone number again, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. Turning now to interesting or important developments recently in animal news. Typically, these are local, regional, national, or sometimes international stories. Note that seem important to spotlight and with any luck to get your comments on and discuss. So, again, if there's any other events or a thing coming up, we also try to highlight that. And happy to have your comments again, either directly by phone 949-824-5824, or of course you can email us at talkinganimals@aol.com. So starting off, of course, typically at the top of the news segment, we talk about Tiger Rescue, and in this case, since we're having Chuck Tracy on to talk at length about the whole Tiger Rescue case, we're going to sort of do a very short version of that, other than to say, as we'll cover in the interview, they're always still looking for volunteers who could go out on a weekend day, better yet if you can swing it on a weekday, and help out caring for these tigers, you know, look after their cages, their food, their water, and it's a really amazing, cool experience. So you can email us at that, talkinganimals@aol.com, and we'll get you all squared away. So also, by the way, the trial date for the proprietor, who we go to great lengths not to name in the interview, but anyway, has been much postponed, and that comes up April 19th. So if you're inclined to go watch a trial or part of a trial, that will be a pretty interesting one. I think it's in the San Bernardino courts. Easy enough to find out through the websites that we'll talk about in the interview itself. More locally, though, want to mention, as we have in the past, of course, actually months ago, we had one of our guests on Talking Animals was Tawny Lee Thompson, a vet tech who teaches classes, Red Cross sanctioned classes in pet first aid and CPR. And we learned all about that and how that works. But the classes themselves, of course, continue at least periodically. And so I just heard from Tawny Lee that there are some other classes coming up again. It's typically Sundays, it's just one day class. from noon to 5, and you learn about all kinds of ways to care for animals that are in distress, or maybe sustain some kind of injury, and just how best to respond to those. So you get the book all about that, and the training of the class itself, and then you get certified. It's a Red Cross certified class. So that's coming up. The next one is April 25th, 2 weeks from yesterday, in Huntington Beach, and then again in May, mid-May, about the 16th, I believe it is. So if you're interested in finding out more about that, you can contact Tawny directly or Trina at 949-586-4250. It's 949-586-4250. So that's a local cool class and event. Going to jump right into our sort of quiz that we always work in, a little instant quiz. It's true, false, one question. If you happen to be the first person to call in and with the correct answer, then you get a prize. And again, we don't just have crummy prizes here. We got CDs and books that are from previous guests on the show, whether that be Ian Anderson or Kristen von Kreisler. We even have a book from someone who's not yet been a guest, but we're hoping eventually might be, which is Shirley MacLaine's book that was co-written, that's right, by her dog. And we've got shirts and jackets and umbrellas from different animal organizations, and we've got collars and leashes and jewelry and some neat stuff. So anyway, so that applies both for now and also later when we do Name That Animal Tune. These are the kind of prizes that are at stake, all right? So we're not just kidding around. All right, so here is our question. It's a simple question. It's true, false. First person that calls in with the correct answer will have a choice of one of those prizes. All right, here we go. A single small brown bat can catch 600 mosquitoes in 1 hour. True or false? A single small brown bat can catch 600 mosquitoes in 1 hour. Do you know the answer? 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI, and we'll be happy to give you your choice of cool prizes of those kind that I just mentioned. So, lucky enough to have Mike Boyle helping us out back in the studio while we try to do this from West Palm Beach. So he'll coordinate that should someone call in that way. So, anyway, going to move on then to another story. In case you do call in, we'll just pick that up then. But a fairly awful story that unfortunately stumbled across in the Associated Press here over the weekend. Dateline, if I may say Dateline, and I don't want to make light of the story otherwise. So anyway, let me just read it to you, at least some of it. It's Nashville, from where the story unfolded, unfortunately. And basically, it starts off, a man who has been charged with killing his neighbor's 2-pound miniature Yorkshire Terrier by place-kicking it into the air like a football. Chad Daniel Crawford, age 23, was booked on charges of cruelty to animals and felony vandalism. He was freed after posting $25,000 bond. Jelani Lewis and Jessica McKenzie said they were shocked and outraged by the death of their 17-year-old Gizmo. That's the dog's name, obviously. Lewis was on the grounds of his apartment complex Tuesday when he said he saw one of the three men holding the dog like a football. The other, quote, the other one backed up and kicked him like a place kicker, said Lewis, who couldn't get there fast enough to save his pet. I didn't believe that they had kicked my dog, Lewis told the Tennessean newspaper. Contacted by telephone in his office, Crawford said the accusations against him were false. He declined further comment and said he was trying to contact an attorney. I mean, very much, I guess, from the file of what are people thinking or doing or whatever. Any thoughts or comments on that or any other animal cruelty cases that might have popped up recently? 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And, in a sense, kind of the flip side to that would be reminding you once again about the Animal Rescue Site. This is a website that, let me just give you the address now and again later. It's www.theanimalrescuesite.com. And if you go there, and you go, basically you can go every day. I mean, you can't go more than once a day for it to work, but you go to the site and there's a section that you can click on called Feed an Animal in Need. And because of an arrangement with corporate sponsors and advertisers, doing so, indeed clicking on that section, frees up monies that helps pay for food and care of animals at various shelters and other facilities. So it seems totally legit, and I've heard about it from a number of places and haven't heard any downside or weird elements or whatever. So again, it's www.theanimalrescuesite.com, and just go there and click on Feed an Animal in Need, and you'll be helping all kinds of animals, especially if you go every day. Just try to get there every day, and that'll be really, really cool. Also, referring to another guest that we had, I think, back in August, was Sonny Benedict, who founded this amazing animal sanctuary down in Baja, California. Actually, it's just near Rosarito Beach, called the Baja Animal Sanctuary. And, you know, as she just told us in that interview, up against all kinds of obstacles beyond the normal ones that people launching sanctuaries and trying to maintain them are, just culturally, financially, obviously not place inherently you know, likely to embrace the spay-neuter concept, etc. So anyways, but still doing great work, looking after, like, you know, 500 animals any given day. I mean, you know, probably higher some days, but not much less than that. So anyways, always in need of help, always in need of food and money and any kind of other contributions. But more to the point, at the moment, they're actually moving their location. They got in some sort of weird hassle with the landlord that seemed, you know, kind of unfair or improper or something. And then on top of that, the city actually opened a pound, like, right next door, which has its own kind of weird set of problems and circumstances. So, anyways, the upshot of that is that they are relocating. They need, of course, some money to do so. So what I'd like to urge you to do is go to their website, www.bajadogs.org, and just look around the site. I mean, see if you're not familiar with it, otherwise check it out. And but again, I think you'll find that it's really, really cool. It has a great mission. They've already done a lot of great work over the years, and they're trying, obviously, to continue that. So then, if you would, just go to the upper right-hand corner of the homepage there, where it says, "Would you like to make a donation?" And I think the answer, of course, is yes, you would. You would like to make a donation to Baja Animal Sanctuary and help them with their ongoing care of all these animals, as well as their relocation plans. So, anyway, that's I think, probably going to do it for today's edition of the Animal News. Again, if there's any questions on any of that, you can email us at talkinganimals@aol.com. And, of course, if there just are ever any news stories or announcements of events that you'd like to bring to our attention, please feel free to email us those items at talkinganimals@aol.com. We'd also love to encourage you to email us with comments about the show, suggestions of future guests, ideas about animal songs, comedy bits, and any other animal topic that's on your mind. That email, again, is talkinganimals@aol.com. And I'm pleased to remind you, perhaps redundantly so, about the Talking Animals website. We hope you'll check out the site at www.talkinganimals.net. Again, that's .net, folks. And join the email list. We can keep you posted on upcoming guests and other announcements. You'll also find archives and synopses of the shows, assorted photographs and articles, all kinds of links, other audio pieces, and more. So please stop by and take a look around the site. Again, it's talkinganimals.net. It's time now to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which, as always, of course, involves an animal-oriented piece of comedy. This is Mitch Hedberg with a very short snippet of a piece called Koalas on today's Comedy Corner here on KUCI.
My apartment is infested with koala bears. It's the cutest infestation ever. Way better than cockroaches. When I turn on the light, a bunch of koala bears scatter. And I don't want them to, you know? I'm like, hey, hold on, fellas. Let me hold one of you. And feed you a leaf. Why do koala bears, they're so fucking cute. Why do they have to be so far away from me? We need to ship a few over, and I will apprehend one. And hold him, all right, and pet him on the back of his head. I've always wanted to have a suitcase handcuffed to my wrist. All right. It's not a full joke, eh? That's a filler. Filler, one of the lists is bending up. I can't read it. All right. Last week I helped my friend stay put. It's a lot easier than helping someone move. I just went over to his house and made sure that he did not start to load shit into a truck.
That was Mitch Hedberg with a short snippet of a piece called Koalas, taken from his CD entitled Strategic Grill Locations. The Comedy Corner is, of course, one of the signature features of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and you are indeed listening to Talking Animals on KUCI 88.9 FM, broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. As many of you know, we also stream live on the internet at www.kuci.org. Some of you, no doubt, are listening that very way, and some of you perhaps got there through our nifty website at talkinganimals.net. Before we proceed, I'm obliged to remind you that the opinions and views expressed on Talking Animals are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. Earlier in the show, I mentioned that this week's guest is Chuck Tracy, the amazing man who has overseen the day-to-day operation of a facility in Colton, California, called Tiger Rescue, helping dozens of tigers and big cats there who'd been subjected to some of the most egregious animal neglect imaginable before the proprietor was arrested on a string of criminal charges and checks stepped up and stepped in. There's quite a bit to the story, so let's get to it. In an interview recorded a little over a week ago, this is Chuck Tracy on Talking Animals here on KUCI. Okay, joining us today on Talking Animals is Chuck Tracy. And, of course, I've been talking about Chuck and Tiger Rescue and the animal news segment of the show for months. But still, first of all, welcome, Chuck, to the show.
Thank you.
And despite that, for our listeners who may not be familiar with the whole situation, and obviously because you can do a much better job explaining it than I can, maybe you could just sort of take us back to the beginning of when this whole saga first began in terms of your awareness of it.
With my awareness, Duncan, and my involvement, it began. First, I might briefly explain. I reside at and operate a large wildlife center down in San Diego County. We perform two functions there. One is as a rehabilitation facility, dealing with indigenous wildlife that are found injured or sick. And another important function for the state of California is as a wildlife shelter. And in that capacity, we are regularly called upon by the Department of Fish and Game, the state's Natural Resources Agency, to take temporary physical custody of various wild animals that for one reason or another they may have to seize. They have no facilities down in Southern California in which to hold such animals themselves, and so we serve in that capacity for the state. Back to the subject at hand, my first knowledge of and awareness of this facility here in Colton, which is in San Bernardino County, called Tiger Rescue, was, believe it or not, in November of 2002, when at the request of Fish and Game, me and a couple of my staff met wardens at the scene of Tiger Rescue, where the owner and operator was being cited on some assorted misdemeanor charges. And the department had us there because they had need to take physical custody as evidence of 10 young tigers. And they ranged in age from just under a year down to just a few months of age.
And if I might, Chuck, what about the situation or about those 10 tigers specifically caused them to be alarmed and or to bring you in and others?
Okay. Duncan, it's my understanding that these were 10 tigers that had been illegally bred at this facility.
Mm-hmm.
Neither this facility nor any other similar facility in the state of California has a permit to breed tigers. And apparently the Department of Fish and Game established information to the effect that this individual was illegally breeding tigers at the facility.
Okay.
These 10 were among those and were seized as evidence.
Okay, gotcha. So really, your involvement in that way then predates what most of us that think we're actually fairly aware of the tiger rescue situation.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
That's where it actually began with my first awareness of the operation.
Okay. And then sort of maybe moving forward a little bit in time then to the key developments that might be more at least familiar to those of us who have been following this in terms of, the raids and some of the other things that really kind of put this in motion on a larger level.
Exactly. My, those 10 tigers that were seized did fine. They were all subsequently transferred to various true sanctuaries. And in the meantime, that was in November of 2002. In April of last year, 2003,
mm-hmm.
I received another call from the senior fish and game personnel up here asking for their assistance. They were going to be serving a search warrant. I was not told at that time upon whose property it was. It was in Riverside County, I was told that much. They were going to be serving a search warrant and anticipated the need to take custody of an adolescent tiger that was reportedly on the property.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked for our presence when the warrant was served to take custody of this tiger. And I believe that is something that early that morning in April, when the warrant was served, I think what was found when we entered that residence was beyond anything that anyone expected, and I believe within a few hours of that warrant being served, it was being broadcast on news coast to coast.
Yeah, well, it was a pretty significant story. Maybe, all the gruesome details, but just maybe you could describe a few of the key elements of what was found when they did go to that home.
They went to the home and they served the warrant predicated upon information that there was going to be one adolescent tiger being illegally held there,
mm-hmm.
and one or two reptiles, either crocodiles, alligators, that were reportedly living in the bathtub of the residence.
Okay.
I never did see those reptiles. What was found was much more than that. This turned out to be the residence. I didn't know that for sure until the morning we met the fish and game personnel,
mm-hmm.
And animal control personnel. It turned out to be the residence of the proprietor of Tiger Rescue.
Mm-hmm.
When we went in, the first thing I noticed was the degree of trash, filth, and fecal matter everywhere on the property. There was nowhere you could walk without stepping through this.
Oh, wow.
There was the one adolescent tiger that was the subject of the search warrant, plus a second, slightly younger one. The adolescent one was in a very old, decrepit 3-foot by 3-foot cage.
Mm.
She was approximately 70 pounds of weight.
Oh, geez.
And the other one, the slightly smaller one, was a few feet away from that cage on a chain or tether around her neck, approximately 4 feet in length, tied to a stake driven in a patio between some bricks.
Mm.
One of these, the larger of the two, had a pretty severe case of mange with most of the fur around her neck was gone.
Oh, wow.
Also, there were dead domestic animals on the property in enclosures with live domestic animals. There were some domestic cats right there on the patio in proximity to the two young tigers. One had just died. Others were without any fur. And were stumbling and staggering.
It just sounds horrific.
It was horrific. In the residence, Animal Control asked me to enter with them. The house was as filthy as the grounds were outside. They asked me to go in to evaluate the reptiles so that they could best find a way of containing them, and I never saw the reptiles. We heard noise coming from an access port leading to a crawl space in the hallway immediately outside the bathroom, and subsequently recovered from that space. We recognized the noise were 11 neonates, 11 babies, 9 baby tigers, most with their eyes still closed. That's how young they were.
Wow.
And 2 baby leopards. These animals were hypothermic, lower than normal body temperature, and they were dehydrated. Also on the property, prior to removing the babies, there were numerous carcasses of large cats, tigers, lions, I wasn't sure, some of them with their legs tied to the bumpers of abandoned cars.
Oh my
and in
God.
A large freezer on the patio where the 2 adolescent tigers were the bodies of 58 baby tigers.
Oh, my God.
The filth and carnage was just everywhere. Both myself, the fish and game personnel, other members of my staff that were assisting me, animal control personnel, and subsequently other county officials that came onto the property were just all amazed at the conditions that were found there.
Yeah, not to mention sickened, probably.
Yeah, it was pretty disgusting. And I would become too graphic for the listeners if I went into more detail beyond this.
Yeah, well, I think we've gotten a fairly, specific glimpse of just how awful that was. So, okay, well, that obviously set things in motion. And then where, in relation to that chronologically, then was the I think, fairly corresponding visit to Tiger Rescue Facility itself?
Okay, well, apparently what transpired is in May, following the raid in April on the residence, in May, the gentleman appeared in court for what's called an indictment. The man was arrested on that day in April, on a series of, there was a young boy on the property, on a series of child endangerment charges and I think various animal neglect and animal cruelty charges.
Sure.
I believe the counts were high on those charges. And
meaning that many of them were felony charges?
I believe some of them were, yes.
Yeah, sure.
I was not privy to the exact charges or their nature.
Sure.
During his indictment on these charges in May, and apparently as a condition of continued bail, the court directed him not to be in physical possession of or provide care for any animals.
Mm-hmm.
And this seemed logical given the nature of the charges.
Sure.
On the other hand, a few miles away at the Tiger Rescue Facility were at that time 54 large cats, now with no one to provide cleanup, feeding, or watering.
Yeah.
And this created a serious dilemma. There was an emergency conference call made with various fish and game personnel, USDA personnel, the district attorneys from both jurisdictions. I was included as a courtesy. No one had any idea what to do. I offered to come up the next day on May 23rd and stay in a hotel up here and be here on a daily basis and maintain the care of those animals since no one else was available to do so.
Wow.
And
that's the sort of ultimate in stepping up because the better part of a year later, there you still are.
I've been up here. I have not been back to my home or my wildlife center in just over 10 months. I've been up here and at the facility every day. The fascinating part is as I was leaving to come up here, I asked my wife, Cindy, to shoot out an email or two just on the outside chance that we might be able to get some people from around the Southland that might be interested, if they had any opportunities, on coming up on a volunteer basis to assist me. And I guess you know how emails go. She sent out one email, and there were people that arrived that same day that I went up there, and that one email spread to others and then others, and every day since, we've had the most amazing people throughout Southern California that have been out there to help.
Absolutely, and I do want to get into that in some detail in a moment, because that's one of the, you know, in a story that's marked with all kinds of darkness, that's to me one of the most uplifting parts of this. But and I want to come back to that in a sec. But just, I'd be really interested first, though, in from the time that you said, you know what, if no one else can really do this, and there's, you know, all those animals that need to be looked after, I'll do it. I'd be really interested to get your account of the first visit you made there. At that point, I mean, what you saw, what
on
the conditions,
that day,
yeah, okay, the conditions
on,
of the animal.
On that first day.
Yeah.
And this was all documented. It was documented with still photographs and videotapes
mm-hmm.
on the very first minute that I set foot on the property.
Sure.
Cages were literally falling apart. There were gates that were coming off hinges.
And again, just to remind people, these are cages with tigers in them.
These are large tigers
yeah.
in these cages,
yeah.
exactly right. The buildup of fecal matter was significant in every cage. Some of the cages had the maggot-covered rotting remains of what were food animals. As best I could determine, some of these remains were of calves. Probably that had died at local dairies and were brought to the facility for food.
Mm.
And that in of itself is not bad. That is fine. But for these carcasses to be left in there until they were rotting, the stench was having volunteers literally vomiting and covered with maggots and yet still in the cages with the tigers.
Mm.
There was no water anywhere on the property. Not one tiger had any water to drink. There were a couple of water containers in a couple of the enclosures. They were dry. A few of the enclosures had large stock tanks that would have been used for play water for tigers. Tigers thrive in water.
Sure.
These tanks were empty and had no drain plugs in them. So even if one wanted to, they could not hold water. Overall, the condition, I must be fair, the condition of most of the tigers was adequate. I felt some could have used a little more weight. There were a few animals, a few cats there, that were clearly significantly underweight.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the early work that was done, you know, I was angered and saddened that these cats had been forced to live in these conditions for, you know, who knows how long.
Sure.
Some of the cages were small. Others, like maybe a 40 by 40 foot cage, contained four large adult tigers. Several of the cats, just from boredom and from fighting because of overcrowded conditions, several of the cats had open wounds.
Mm.
There were no, let's call it toys. There was nothing in these barren cages
to stimulate
that would provide
them.
Any distraction,
mm-hmm.
no stimulation.
Yeah.
There was just, it was just very, very bleak and desolate.
Oh, jeez. And at that point, I mean, I guess now, since again, things have gotten better and better, and we're going to get to some of the, you know, relatively happy ending to the saga in a few moments. But, I mean, at that moment, having said, you know what, I'll do it. Somebody needs to do it. I'll do it. I mean, you must have just been hit with such a, you know, crazy quilt of emotions at that point, thinking, oh, my God, right?
I was, but I managed to immediately gain control of my emotions because to do the work that had to be done there, there was a lot of work to do initially. To do that work,
sure.
I had to remain fully focused and did not have time to experience any emotions over the what I considered to be the horrendous situation.
Yeah, and so I guess kind of the cliched question now that you've given us really, you know, great sort of backdrop and description of, you know, I mean, great in the sense that it's awful, but I mean, very detailed. I mean, the question, of course, is, like, how could this happen? I mean, how could this get so extreme and for so long? I mean, I don't know which is kind of more troubling, what was happening at the man's house or what was happening at the facility,
I understand where you're going with that question. It's the best I can do is speculate. I don't think anyone will ever have the answer to that.
Yeah.
This facility, along with others like it, are licensed by the State Department of Fish and Game, and because of the nature of this facility's operations, showing these animals, displaying them, and charging admission for people to see them, is also licensed by the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a very simplistic thing. I know it's really not the type of answer anyone wants to hear, but I can only speculate that things just fell through the cracks somehow.
Okay.
I know for sure that the California Department of Fish and Game is seriously, like most agencies in California, understaffed and under-budgeted. I don't know about USDA, but I suspect that things just fell through the cracks.
Well, that must be the case because, if I'm not mistaken, I think I remember being told, in fact, I think by you, very early on in this process, that there had been reports and that authorities had been out there, at least on, you know, some number of occasions. So
I've been given numerous reports early on of people that contacted me and said, you know, I called USDA,
mm-hmm.
I reported this, and I believe it was some of those reports that actually got the Department of Fish and Game checking into it both in November of 2002
mm-hmm.
and then following up clearly again in April that really broke this whole thing open.
Yeah. But still, I guess since it really, as you say, it just slipped through the cracks, I mean, is the tiger rescue situation just kind of freakishly singular, or does it represent something else that you know that we can and should learn from and put more, you know, provisions?
We should learn a lot.
Yeah.
And more important than tiger rescue is what it represents.
Mm-hmm.
In this country, there are approximately 20,000 tigers in private ownership.
Yeah.
In SATO sanctuaries, such as Tiger Rescue, which called itself a sanctuary, but in fact wasn't. The animals were exploited for profit.
And really,
there are
Chuck,
places
just,
like that everywhere around the country.
And sorry, I don't want to interrupt, but just quickly, on was this basically at the end of the day a breeding operation? And so what was driving all the crazy conditions you've described?
What was happening, and this is factual, is for visitors to come and see these tigers, they paid a flat rate to walk through around the outside of the enclosures
mm-hmm.
To look in and see the tigers.
Yeah.
They were then given an opportunity for $20 for a Polaroid photo of themselves holding a baby tiger,
mm-hmm.
and for $100, they could spend 20 minutes sitting in a cage playing with two or more baby tigers. For this to continue to generate money, there always had to be baby tigers.
Yeah.
Because after just a couple of months, the cute little cuddly baby tiger is now so playful and so feisty that even just slightly larger than a big house cat, they can do some serious damage playing with their claws and teeth.
So there has to be new baby cubs rotated in.
So there always have to be new babies to generate the income from that type of thing.
So as far as anyone knows then, as bad as that is, because at one point I couldn't help wondering if he was, you know, especially with the numbers of carcasses found at his home, if he was also sending tigers elsewhere.
You know something? I have heard nothing about that.
Okay.
In terms of selling them or something.
Well,
I have heard nothing about
that,
and I have no reason whatsoever to believe that was happening.
Yeah. Well, it almost doesn't matter. I mean, whatever it is, it's bad. But I just wondered. I mean, just given the sheer numbers that apparently were, you know, passing through there, and the numbers, unfortunately, of carcasses that were found, I just thought, well, is this just about people taking pictures at that facility, or is it beyond that as well? But anyway, so back, sorry, Chuck, I just thought this was an important point to make, but back to your larger point, really, about just the number of tigers there are you know, everywhere in the state.
There are. It's a national problem. It's an epidemic in this country. You can buy baby tigers, leopards, lions, cougars, you know, mountain lions, African lions. You can buy just about any wild animal you want for a very, very low price in many states.
Yeah.
They openly advertise on the internet. Any of your listeners, if they doubt me, type in a few, just the right key words, and you'll find places in many different states where you can go and buy a baby tiger as low as $200.
Mm.
That doesn't mean it's legal for you to have it in whatever state you live in. But the point is, there are many states you can go to where you can buy these animals, including
yeah.
baby bears.
Wow.
These animals are bred daily in this country for pure profit. The breeders breed them to sell. People buy them. Many buy them to use them for profit. Others buy them because they'll think it'll make a cute pet. Until it gets just a few months old, and then it's no longer a cute pet, and it's remanded to a small, disgusting cage in their backyard where it lives, I should say, exists,
mm-hmm.
and in most cases not fed properly. And for many of these poor animals that never should have been born, once they do eventually die, that is about the only release they will ever get.
Mm. So
from
Chuck,
a pretty horrible existence.
Yeah, no, it's just, I mean, and the thing is, it sounds really bleak because it sounds like the tiger rescue situation, as awful as it is, it isn't really that much of a cautionary tale that people can, you know, take much hope from that, hey, well, given how bad this was, or a comparable situation sort of in the East Coast that has been in the news recently, you know, it doesn't really sound like there's any particular provisions, laws, regulations that maybe have been newly enacted or will be. And even if it sounds like, if I'm following you correctly, even if they were, that this is such a kind of illicit black market operation anyway, that wouldn't necessarily help address this on any significant level.
No, tiger rescue is the tip of the iceberg.
Mm.
There are places worse than it, places
what?
Just like it, and places worse than it.
That,
you know, just recently the president signed a bill. It had been worked on for several years that at the federal level makes it illegal for the interstate transport of any of these large animals, these large wild animals, except to accredited sanctuaries, of which there are very few, and to accredited zoological facilities. So that's a step. It's a small step,
mm-hmm.
but it's a step nonetheless. What has to happen eventually, since this breeding is done not in the interest of conservation and preservation, as they try to tell people, those are good buzzwords. Anyone environmentally concerned loves hearing the term conservation and preservation. There's no genetic purity in these animals. They're mutts. There's no genetic purity whatsoever. There are numerous cases, some at my facility right now, where these animals are clearly inbred,
mm.
resulting in congenital and genetic deformities.
Mm.
We have an African lion down there that was clearly the byproduct of inbreeding, mm. one that was confiscated by the authorities when he was a baby. There's no conservation or preservation occurring. It's pure profit.
Yeah.
And nothing else.
Sure.
And there's things people can do. Us as individuals, we can't enact legislation in various states to put a stop to these breeding facilities. But there's one thing that all of us can do. When we are familiar with a so-called sanctuary or some facility like this in our area, and we may visit it, we may even support it because we think they're doing a good thing, we need to take a look. Does this place always have babies? If so, why?
Mm-hmm.
There's a standard reason they will give people as to why they have babies. It's the same explanation that all of these questionable places give when they're inquired. Do you have to pay money to get into this place to see the animals? Do they bring them to schools? Do they bring them to shows and to parties? Do they make them perform? Do they drag them around on a big chain and display them for people? Do they humiliate the poor animals that way? Do they breed? When you see places like this, and
yeah.
it's things like this that they do, stop your support of those facilities, because they're phony and they're fraudulent.
Mm-hmm.
They're using these animals to make money. They can call themselves a sanctuary. They can call themselves a rescue. They can call themselves Nirvana if they want.
Yeah.
They're pure, fraudulent places that are exploiting these animals in the interest of profit.
And exacerbating this very problem. Yeah. Ugh, wow. Well, Chuck, we have just a few minutes left, so in our remaining time, it'd be nice to... I guess swing this into something a little brighter and more upbeat. So we alluded to this earlier, but one of the things I'd like to ask you about, just because I've been so impressed by this, you know, both from a distance and directly, although not as much as I would have liked, but maybe you can talk a little bit about the whole volunteer situation, because it has been, as you mentioned, Omega, I guess from that first email that your wife Cindy sent out, I mean, it has been, I think, one of the most, you know, uplifting, or at least offset the darkness of this story, to see the number of people who have flocked in daily from increasingly sort of far-flung locations over this year's time.
Duncan, let me give you two separate brief things
sure.
that both are bright
okay.
and will have an upbeat ending to this story.
Okay.
One is the volunteers.
Yeah.
To my amazement, after still just over 10 months, we still, every day, have people coming out to this place, driving from the coast, driving from San Diego, driving from all around the Southland, from
mm-hmm.
all around Southern California, coming out, spending their gas money, fighting through traffic to spend the day here taking care of these animals,
mm-hmm.
cleaning their enclosures, giving them fresh water and big tubs of water to play in, and feeding them.
Yeah.
And that continues after 10 months. I made a commitment on day one to do this for the duration. I understand my commitment, but I'm nevertheless every day amazed at people that continue to come out here.
Sure.
Sometimes new people, sometimes people that have been here almost daily for the same length of time I have.
Wow.
Some of these people are animal people. Others have had no experience with this type of animal in their lives.
Sure.
And they come out and they keep coming back.
Wow.
And that continues to amaze me.
Yeah.
A second upbeat thing. At one point, early in this operation, and I won't bore you with the details, the large cats at this facility became wards of the state of California. As soon as that happened, several of the animals in July of last year were transferred to highly accredited sanctuaries.
I was going to ask about, yeah, because I knew that, but I was really fascinated. That's one of the things I did want to ask you, is how those opportunities did unfold and how it was determined which cats would move.
Okay. The bulk of the cats that were on the property were tigers.
Okay.
Unfortunately, of all the large cats in private ownership around the country, tigers are the most common.
Mm-hmm.
The initial animals that left, and this is a direct result of work done by my organization, the Fund for Animals Incorporated,
mm-hmm.
contacting and inspecting facilities around the country that, although highly accredited, were still scrutinized. If we were going to assist the state in placement of these animals, it was our determination that they were going to go to the finest facilities available. In July, we transferred 12 leopards, 2 African lions, and a mountain lion to different facilities around the country
mm-hmm.
That are highly accredited. That left, here on site, 39 tigers. Now, I mentioned earlier in this conversation that true accredited sanctuaries are few and far in between.
Right.
Those that do exist one might have been able to take one tiger here, another one, another tiger. We had 39 adult tigers we had to deal with.
Yeah.
And the happy ending to the story is right around the corner for us. There is a highly accredited sanctuary right here in California, in the San Andreas area, called PAWS,
mm-hmm.
the Performing Animal Welfare Society. This organization, if we were able to raise funds, had hundreds of acres and beautiful, beautiful habitat, and agreed, if we could raise funds to build the enclosures, agreed to take all 39 tigers.
Yeah, amazing.
Everyone was thrilled. We raised $250,000, $250,000, just for building these enclosures. These are state-of-the-art enclosures, very possibly the finest housing for tigers anywhere in this country. The enclosures are being constructed now. 10 acres is being committed to these 39 tigers.
That's so amazing.
Beautiful enclosures. We anticipate that possibly as early as the end of this month, as early as the end of April, but more than likely into May, we will start transferring these tigers to their new and wonderful facilities up at PAWS.
And it's so exciting. And in fact, I've been fortunate enough to, the specific area that PAWS has two or three different facilities. And the
they
one
do.
That you're referring to is called R2000, which I was fortunate enough to visit a couple years ago.
Isn't it beautiful?
Oh, my God. It's just stunning. And it's huge. It's, I think, I want to say off the top of my head, 2,300 acres.
And you've seen the terrain. I
yeah.
have simply seen videos and photos of
yeah.
it. I think these tigers may end up living better than you and I do.
Yeah, well, and as well they should.
They deserve it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that is a really happy ending. And before we kind of just say goodbye here, Chuck, along those lines, between now and the time they are relocated, you still need volunteers. So we want to say that you can contact us at Talking Animals or...
and exactly, and you can put people directly in touch with Cindy.
Absolutely.
Who coordinates the scheduling of all volunteers.
And we also want to encourage people that are hearing this at any point to make any kind of donations they can help with. I guess, could that be online through fund.org, Chuck? Or
that would be the most effective
yeah.
way to learn exactly
yeah.
how to make donations.
Okay.
And to make sure that the donations they make
earmarked.
Are directed
yeah.
to whatever program, in this case the Tigers, that they wish it to be directed to.
Right. Okay, so that's www.fund.org to find out
exactly
and to make
right.
this donations and to help these tigers and just get them all squared away in their lovely new habitats and enclosures there. So, Chuck Tracy, thank you so much. And as I've said on the air a bunch of times, I've been so just impressed and just gratified, especially given what these animals have been through, to see what you've done every day. And I know there's a huge battalion of volunteers, but still 10 months away from your own facility, away from your wife, away from, you know, friends and other stuff. I mean, it's been an amazing commitment that you've made, and I just, my hat's off to you, and I think tons and tons of other people feel the same way. So thank you very, very much.
Well, I appreciate hearing those words, Duncan, and thank you very much for your interest in this story.
Absolutely. Okay, thanks again. This is Chuck Tracy joining us about the tiger rescue debacle, but the happy ending to that debacle. So thanks again for joining us on Talking Animals, Chuck.
You're welcome.
We want to thank again Chuck Tracy for joining us today on Talking Animals. Again, the pertinent websites are fund.org, www.fund.org, and savethetigers.com to find out more about the situation that Chuck was explaining and where it's going. And again, you can email us at talkanimals@aol.com if you're interested in volunteering. And keep in mind that next Monday, April 19th, is when the proprietor's often postponed trial is now set to start. So I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals on KUCI and Irvine 88.9 FM, streaming live on the internet at KUCI.org. It's time now to proceed to Name That Animal Tune. This is remarkably like any version of Name That Tune you'd care to mention, except that in this game, the tunes are always animal-related, usually just by virtue of one or more animals being part of the song title, but occasionally it's a bit more indirect than that. And like most renditions of the game, we can only provide a brief snippet of the tune in question for a number of reasons, not least that while, of course, the game hinges on a song being somewhat recognizable, at least we also don't want to stray too far for too long from the KUCI music policy. So with that preamble behind us, and also knowing there's always a prize, that's right, a prize, folks, for the first caller who correctly identifies the song, in this case, so as soon as you recognize this animal tune, which has kind of been in the news lately, please phone us at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. Okay, let's get started. It's Talking Animals, KUCI.